Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and not to get all old school black and white movie on you all, but there's a scene from the classic film called Casablanca where Paul Enreid tells Humphrey Bogart, "Welcome to the fight." This week, Michigan Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer tried to go a little old school or vintage herself by giving a 20-minute speech detailing how Dear Leader Trump's tariffs and economic policies, if that's what we're calling them, are leading the state of Michigan to ruin. And she also declared MAGA man baby State House Speaker Matt Hall's budget a pain to be a one-way ticket to nowhere, to quote Ed Rooney from Ferris Bueller. Not as old of a movie. Well, I mean, I guess it is now. It's almost 40 years old. Oh, wow. Anyway, Whitmer declared, and I quote, "Stubborn inflation, stagnating wage growth, plummeting credit scores, and debt piling up, especially for young people, creeping unemployment. This is a man-made storm of uncertainty that hits Michigan hard." And she said, "Companies are cutting, not creating jobs in Michigan. Costs are going up, not down." And while Whitmer's tone changed a touch, she refused to name Dear Leader himself during her criticisms of his tariffs. And she even declared it's a man-made storm, you know, by his doing. But she couldn't find the courage to call him out by name. I mean, what are we doing here, Governor? What are we doing here? Stick up for your people against this authoritarian ruler who's harming our state. Now, I like to say, welcome to the fight, Governor, but you refuse to even state who the fight is against. What the hell are you running on if you decide to run for president in 2 years? What is going to be your platform? How are you going to mobilize and energize? And also, how are you going to inspire people to want to back you? I don't get it. Anyway, costs are going up everywhere, and jobs aren't being created since Michigan's unemployment rate remains the third highest in the country. Michigan's median income remains at the bottom half of the nation, and the country is experiencing the slowest job growth in more than a decade. And just to tell you, a little anecdotal evidence, I went to the store and picked up some things to fill up one reusable bag, one. And I had to do a triple take at the bill. I won't tell you how much it cost, but I didn't think I was buying the most posh and luxurious of items at a freaking Meijer. But maybe I was, I don't know. But thanks to Dear Leader's insane tariff scheme, Michigan is suffering more since we rely on auto manufacturing, of course. Oh, but it's just not auto manufacturing that's suffering from the tariffs. No, no, no. Michigan's farmers are suffering too. According to WILX-TV News in Lansing, the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development reports that Dear Leader's insane MAGA Republican tariff scheme is causing higher food prices, uncertainty in the ag and food industries, and leading to lower ag exports. See, farmers kind of count on those exports to survive. And listen to this, according to the Michigan Department of Ag and Rural Development report, and I'm quoting from that same news story, according to the findings, tariffs are increasing costs and creating challenges for Michigan's food and ag sector, which adds about $126 billion to the state's economy each year and supports over 800,000 jobs. In 2024, before the implementation of the current round of tariffs, Michigan reached a record in ag exports, sending nearly $3 billion worth of food and farm products abroad. So again, MAGA Republicans, how is this winning? This isn't just hitting Michiganders hard across the board, but it's also hurting the Michigan family farmer. You know, the ones that MAGA Republicans and Dear Leader claim to really care about. And then there's this. According to Michigan Public Radio, due to uncertainty in state funding, since MAGA Republicans are all about cutting and cutting, farmers' suicide prevention programs are at risk. Now, I don't know about you, and maybe I'm just spitballing here, sports fans, but I'm wondering, at a time when Deer Leader's insane MAGA Republican tariff scheme is full steam ahead, and farmers are getting body slammed because of it, would now be a good time to cut back on farmer suicide prevention programs? Huh? What? I'm just not sure how this is a brilliant strategy for Michigan's farmers. But to paraphrase the late Robert Redford from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you just keep thinking, Matt Hall. That's what you're good at. By the way, a government shutdown within the state of Michigan is about 2 weeks away, as the MAGA House and the Democratic majority in the state Senate can't really agree on much. But that's exactly what Matt Hall wants. I have a quick riddle here for MAGA Michigan Republicans, okay? How can you blame all of the economic woes hitting Michigan on just Gretchen Whitmer and also on Michigan Democrats while at the very same moment complain about more and more unhoused Michiganders while the state struggles to find shelters, let alone affordable housing for the working class? I mean, I tend to see all kinds of MAGA Michigan Republicans being all militant about cleaning out the unhoused working class Michiganders. And they kind of even seem to get off on it whenever they see that unhoused people are being cleared out of their view. They blame the governor and they blame Michigan Democrats for a poor economy. You would think thereby they would want to help people who are struggling in this economy. No, they don't want to help them. They want to see them suffer. These MAGA cult members have no freaking clue on what the hell's going on, just as long as they're inflicting pain on those that they've been taught to fear. And that's how we get moments like this from this past week when Fox News' Brian Kilmeade advocated for the lethal killing of homeless people. All right, so he's the last voice you're going to hear in this Fox and Friends clip. Listen.
Billions of dollars to mental health and the homeless population. A lot of them don't want to take the programs. A lot of them don't want to get the help that is necessary. You can't give them a choice. Either you take the resources that we're going to give you and or you decide that you're going to be locked up in jail. That's the way it has to be now.
Or involuntary lethal injection or something. Just kill them.
Yeah, Brian, why did it have to get to this point?
Right.
Yes. Oh, that was just hilarious. Oh, wait. Maybe we're taking him out of context. You know, like I'm hearing everyone is doing nowadays by posting the late Charlie Kirk's exact words in context during the past decade. But Brian Kilmeade, he did apologize the next day, which told everyone that, no, we heard him in the right context. But that's how they view working class Americans who are homeless. They're disgusted by them. Yeah, sure, they'll at one point blame the left for Dear Leader's economic calamity, but do they care about the people who have to deal with that calamity? No. So yeah, Brian Kilmeade, he gets to keep his job, though. Unlike ABC's late-night host, Jimmy Kimmel, because as of this recording, ABC has indefinitely suspended Jimmy Kimmel for a joke that he made where there was one small part of the joke where he said that Charlie Kirk's murderer was linked to MAGA. That wasn't the joke. It was just a little part, though, of the setup. Now, when that was recorded, when they recorded that part, I'm not sure that they had heard the news of the murderer's text messages in which he said that he killed Kirk because he couldn't stand Kirk's hatred. I'll have more on that in a second. Regardless, it was a small part of a joke by Jimmy Kimmel, who said that Deer Leader was taking his good friend's death really hard by showing a news clip where Deer Leader was asked how he's holding up from Charlie Kirk's death, and Deer Leader said that he was doing rather well, and hey, look at all these construction trucks working on my new $200 million ballroom. And Kimmel said that Trump had obviously moved on to the next stage of grief, construction. Now, he didn't mention anything about Charlie Kirk. He just played another one of the ubiquitous clips revealing Deer Leader's mental state or lack thereof. However, that made Deer Leader mad, and he cried, and he forced his FCC chairman, MAGA right-winger Brandon Carr, to threaten ABC to cancel Kimmel or else. Ah, yes, there you go. The free speech party is at it again. ABC is owned by Disney, of course, but apparently several ABC affiliates are owned by that extreme right-wing media company, Sinclair, which, by the way, canceled out all local news on my NBC affiliate here so that they could air corporate authoritarianism around the clock. Another ABC affiliate, Nexstar, announced that it is preempting Kimmel's show for the near future. And I'm just sure that Nexstar's $6 billion bid to merge with another media company has nothing to do with this whatsoever. I'm sure of it. I'm sure that Dear Leader's re-regulating. Yeah, they call it deregulating, but no, I call it re-regulating of the media market where we get fewer and fewer choices. You know, monopolies. Yeah, very much the free market, right? Yeah, I'm sure that wasn't on Nexstar's radar as it made its decision to cut Kimmel's show from its affiliates. I'm sure that had nothing to do with it whatsoever. It's always transactional, always transactional. And it's always government corruption with the Trump regime. And corporations are willing to play this game, which is why we are experiencing corporate authoritarian rule right now. Now, Kimmel's forced sidelining is just the beginning. And as I argued in my Friday short last week and in this week's Monday Musing, MAGA Republicans will use the Charlie Kirk assassination to not only lie about all the racist, misogynistic, white Christian nationalist, pro-corporate authoritarian garbage that he spewed on a daily basis, but they'll use his death to force progressive, independent voices into submission. And Jimmy Kimmel isn't someone I call some big-time leftist, but the state leveraging its control over media and the state saying that, hey, you have to shut down opposing viewpoints to make Dear Leader and his army happy. That is the very definition of state-controlled media. And we wonder why more and more people are cutting the cable cords and leaving network TV behind. I mean, other than sports, I really don't watch network TV anymore. So, Jimmy, just leave it, brother. I mean, that's my advice. Just leave it. You've already made some great cash, all right? Start a podcast. Start a YouTube show. You'll be fine. It's moves like this that'll force more and more people to leave local TV anyway. Just move on. This is state-controlled media, and it's the very definition of cancel culture that MAGA Republicans claim to have always despised. Right. They despised free speech for progressives and for independents. So everyone, I hate to tell you this, but this is just the beginning. Just the beginning. Now, as I explained in my Monday musing, several prominent MAGA Michigan voices were outraged how some schools didn't lower their flags for the late MAGA right-wing propagandist Charlie Kirk. And so they ended up taking pictures of the schools and then posting them online, shaming them for not lowering their flags to half-staff. And I am sure that doesn't put the schools in any kind of danger considering today's political climate. But I'm told that we all have to tone down our rhetoric. And it's because of some of these calls for retribution from MAGA Republicans or influencers or personalities on Fox News that leads to threats of violence against others. Democratic Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist announced that he's received a credible bomb threat at his house. The same thing happened to Democratic State Representative Jeremy Moss. And then there was this highly disturbing story involving Progressive State Representative Emily Diefendorf, who's also a good friend here of the show. WLNS in Lansing reported that Diefendorf has been subjected to threats after someone in the state legislature took a picture of the representative during a moment of prayer and reflection after Kirk's assassination. The picture, which was taken against House rules, showed Representative Diefendorf and another representative sitting down, which is okay. And Diefendorf said their head was down, staring at their desk. It was then posted on social media and shared with many others because they thought Representative Diefendorf wasn't sincere enough. Now, Diefendorf said they naturally disagreed with Kirk, but that they are always against political violence. However, because that picture was shared online, Diefendorf has been flooded with messages threatening violence against the representative and their family. In fact, here's Representative Diefendorf answering a question from WKAR's Sophia Salibi on what's gone through the representative's mind since receiving all of these hate-filled messages. Listen.
Can you talk about what went through your mind as you received these very, very dark and violent messages?
I don't want to say that I was afraid or that I am afraid right now, because I will not be intimidated out of doing my job. But it is scary. And I have avoided being at home since I started getting those messages and have had to question whether I should be out and about in the community. And I have the same concern for my staff, and I have the same concern for all of my colleagues, because this threat may have been directed at a handful of us in Michigan in an explicit way, but they certainly suggest that Democrats in general should be afraid for their physical safety.
I think you could tell there that Representative Diebendorf is indeed concerned. And this is where we're at right now, everyone. And I'll repeat myself. Violence, or the threat of violence, is what drives the MAGA cult. This isn't new. Threatening Democratic officials isn't new to them. And they're doing it because they want to scare us into submission. They want further capitulation. Thankfully, we've got true fighters down in Lansing like Representative Emily Diebendorf, who refuses to back down to them. Now, that being said, I did want to take note that if these text messages from Kirk's assailant are indeed true, then the assailant did go after Kirk for his views on the LGBTQ plus community. I'd even call them hateful views. And that is horrific. We progressives do not believe in the taking of human life. However, other work by freelance reporters like Ken Klippenstein and others also show the murderer really didn't share many drastic political views in some other texts and other messages throughout the years. I mean, he was obviously aware of the gaming culture, and that's where some of the references that he made are from. But this monster still took it upon himself to decide we couldn't defeat Charlie Kirk and his message of hate and ignorance on our own through debate and through the art of persuasion. No, this monster instead decided to shoot him dead. And that's not what we're about here in a free society. And let me just say right here, I know that there's a lot of speculation as to whether or not the text messages that authorities released are real. And I'm just going to go with what we've got right now. Are they real or not? Well, here's how I look at it. If they aren't real, the prosecution is going to be in some major trouble if those text messages are not real in a court of law. They'll just get tossed out. So if they aren't real or they're doctored in some way, well, we'll find out soon, I suppose, right? But that's all we've got to go on right now. So if there's one part that stuck out to me from those text messages, it's that the murderer texted his roommate slash lover that he wasn't sure how he was going to explain to his dad that he used his grandpa's unique gun to kill Charlie Kirk. I mean, he seemed to care more about the gun than about killing another human being. And it reminded me of that Childish Gambino video for his song, This Is America, where every time he shoots someone with a gun, someone else off camera runs in, takes care of the gun, wraps it up before anyone cares about the victims, if they even care about them at all. The gun received more attention and care than victims. And we are learning that this kid grew up in a family filled with guns, and he used this gun expertise to kill Charlie Kirk, who would have fought for his right to have as many guns as possible. You're not hearing many MAGA Republicans offering any kinds of gun safety measures to ensure other killings like this don't happen. But this is America. Yet we can't forget how right after the shooting, MAGA Republicans and influencers tried to blame Kirk's death on transgender Americans. But if those text messages from the shooter to his roommate lover, who authorities say is transgender, if those text messages are legit, then it proves that the shooting wasn't done by a trans person. In fact, the roommate's texts appear to be stunned after the shooter admitted that he killed Kirk. So it appeared that the roommate was completely in the dark. And that added to some major disappointment for the MAGA cult, who really wanted to blame it all on the trans community. And it's been the trans community that has been the target of hate from the MAGA cult through the years. Like this week, Michigan MAGA Nutball State Representative Matt Maddock tweeted, listen to this, translation, Dems to inject all of their modern day sexual perversions into schools and will never stop forcing their degeneracy upon our kids and grandkids. Wow. All right, Matt. You know, that sounds pretty serious. What are we talking about here? Well, according to the Detroit Free Press, the Michigan Board of Education is taking public comment on updating its sex education curriculum, which would include discussions around sexual orientation, gender identity, and online safety, topics not included in the older standard posted by the state online. Oh my God, the horror of the state updating its sex education terminology since 2007. But you see, what Matt Maddock and his MAGA cult white Christian nationalists are doing there is they are trying to dehumanize trans individuals, and they're also trying to make them sound as if they're a threat. What happened to turning down the rhetoric there, MAGA? What about turning down that negative speech there, Matt Matic? You know, Matic is so obsessed with the genitals of children that it's very disturbing to me. Then again, the Milford Republican did vote against banning child marriage last year. And that's what's made the recent decision by the University of Michigan Hospital Organization to stop prescribing gender-affirming care for people under 19 hard to really take and hard to really understand. At this time, capitulating? Really, U of M? Now, U of M said the decision was made via threats from the Trump regime. But it's just more and more capitulation. And that leads us down a deep and ugly path that we will find difficult to get out. Capitulation. That might be the word of the week, don't you think? Thankfully, we have some true progressive fighters in Michigan who are doing what they can to fight back against such actions, especially considering that gender-affirming care is legal in Michigan. Our good friend Julia Pulver will join us to talk more about this U of M decision and how to speak up for those who will be severely harmed by this decision. You're listening to LOL.
A podcast that believes in using common sense to move Michigan into the future. And by common sense, we mean progressive sense. We've all seen what 40 years of Republican leadership did to this state, and we refuse to go back. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. You can follow Pat on Facebook or X. Pat still calls it Twitter. Or on the Gram, Threads, and also on YouTube. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. All right, I think we gave Pat enough time to catch his breath. Let's get back to it. Here's Pat Johnston.
Again, if you'd ever like to contact me to ask questions or continue on a topic that I've brought up here, just email me. It's real easy, leftoflansing@gmail.com. All right, I'd like to use this segment to talk with a strong progressive activist who's put her name on a ballot for a couple of times for a state Senate seat in northern Oakland County, who has also advocated for the voiceless Michiganders who were left behind from that horrible auto insurance so-called reform bill, who has supported abortion and reproductive rights of women, who is a registered nurse and is a patients' rights activist, and who's also a major and outspoken advocate for LGBTQ plus rights. And she's had plenty of experience dealing with the hate-filled attacks by MAGA right-wing white Christian nationalist Republicans throughout her life in the political spotlight. But she doesn't back down. She's a progressive fighter for those who can't afford high-priced lobbyists and consultants to get heard in Lansing. And lastly, she's just a really good friend to the show. Julia Pulver, thanks so much for squeezing in some time to talk with us this week. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat, for all that you do and for letting me get on here and speak my piece.
So the University of Michigan made some news in the past few weeks, and not in a good way, as I mentioned in the show open. The university's hospital system announced what I call a major cowardly capitulation to the Trump regime, saying that it would no longer provide gender-affirming care for Michigan's transgender youth. Now, back in late August, University of Michigan Health and its Michigan Medicine brand announced that it was going to end its gender-affirming care due to some federal pressure, including criminal and civil investigations into their gender-affirming care programs for minors. Now, Julia, before we talk about the ramifications of U of M's decision, I was just hoping maybe you could explain, for those who may not know much about you and your family's story, why such a decision like this especially hit home hard for you.
Sure. So as many people may or may not know, I have a trans son who's a senior in high school, and our story has been shared this month very generously and lovingly by the ACLU of Michigan to just try to highlight, like, hey, I know trans kids and whether or not they are, you know, deserving of healthcare or deserving of, you know, the protection of adults around them is kind of top of mind. But please keep in mind who we're talking about. Like, these are human beings. These are children. Like, do you remember children? That this is not something just for political games or to score points. Like, this is affecting real people's lives. So the decision by U of M has directly impacted my son and his ability to get care. And we're having to deal with the fallout of that. And their cowardice, unfortunately, is contagious, because just this week, Corewell Health also said they were going to obey in advance and decide that they were going to end gender-affirming care for minors. And who knows which cowardly healthcare system will be the next to fold because cowardice is contagious. So this does affect me very personally. And even if it didn't, though, I will say as a nurse and as somebody who's always been a patient advocate, I have been absolutely horrified by what I have seen coming out of these, you know, so-called healthcare organizations and just how quickly they have abandoned their patients, their most vulnerable patients.
Were you caught off guard by the University of Michigan's decision?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is textbook discrimination, right? Like it made absolutely no sense to me that they've decided without any fight whatsoever to just roll over and announce to the world that they are planning to discriminate against their patients who are trans, right? Because these medications we're talking about, right? This specifically, just to make it clear what happened. A lot of institutions, usually, you know, university-backed healthcare systems around the country were sent these threatening-ish kind of, you know, letters or subpoenas for patient records, right? For minor trans patients saying, we want to investigate you and we want to investigate your care of these patients and look for, go on whatever fishing expedition they can try to find, right? And that's a very intimidating thing. Even though it was completely baseless and meritless, there are privacy laws, right? There are HIPAA protection. This is an actual HIPAA violation, right? You know, remember back during COVID, everyone was an expert on what is and isn't a HIPAA violation. This is an actual HIPAA violation. So, and they were sent these like nasty grams basically by the Fed saying, we're going to come after you for breaking the law. They just went, okay, never mind. We won't do it anymore. Even though they're breaking no laws. And the thing I think that is the most insane to me is U of M and Corewell Health, and who we'll see if anybody else, you know, follows them down the road of bootlicking here. They went, oh, okay, well, even though we're not breaking any laws, we're just going to go ahead and roll over and say, never mind, just leave us alone. We'll throw our patients under the bus. We'll pretend that they never existed. We'll be good. We promise. Just leave us alone. Right. And the attorney general of our state has come and told all of them, like, wait a second. First of all, we have a lawsuit pending. Like everything that they sent us is blatantly and not even illegal, but just meritless. There is no law that is being broken. It is gender affirming care for minors in Michigan is 100% legal. And not just because of existing laws in the books, the voters of Michigan went and approved Prop 3. Remember that? That included having the right to your care, not just reproductive care as we think of it, but all bodily autonomy care, right? So it is in our state's constitution. It's protected by the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act. And there is no federal law that says gender-affirming care for minors is illegal. So they're being threatened with prosecutions under non-existent laws. There is no law being broken here. And that just, again, makes absolutely no sense to me. So basically what U of M and what Corewell Health have done is say, well, we're afraid of being persecuted by the regime because they have decided to attack our patients. And even though if we were to fight back, we would win. Because by the way, Boston Children's Hospital, not every hospital has caved. Boston Children's Hospital, when they got the exact same threatening garbage, they actually pushed back. And guess what? They won. They won in court. So our attorney general was saying to them, like, dude, we are about to win this in court. Yeah. Why are you doing this? It makes no sense. And she rightfully called them all cowards. And well, she is absolutely right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just asking in terms of what we saw happen earlier this year between the Trump regime and higher education institutions. We saw how throughout the year they would threaten or withhold funds for federal programs or for grant programs if institutions kept their DEI policies, for example. And we saw how the University of Michigan did capitulate at times to federal pressure. So I guess maybe I was wondering, you know, in the back of your mind, did you have some kind of fear that going after gender affirming care would be another step that they would take and they wanted to see how many organizations would capitulate, just like University of Michigan and Corewell Health have?
You know, and that's the hard thing with capitulation is you always wonder, where are they going to draw the line? Yeah. Like when they go after sort of using vague terms like go after DEI, It's really vague, right? You don't know what that means. Are you saying like, okay, we can't have any discussion of any sort of race relations in the country? Are you saying you have to fire all the women and gay people? It's a really vague idea of like what anti-DEI efforts look like. So I don't think they quite knew what they were. Not that it makes it right. It's still cowardly and they should have fought back, because every single time anyone fights back in court against their meritless crap, they win because it's meritless crap. But you kind of go, okay, well, yeah, that's really stupid, but it's kind of vague. So maybe they weren't quite sure what they were signing up for. This is specific. I was caught off guard because I could not imagine. I have been a nurse for over 20 years, and I cannot fathom ever telling my patients, no, you can't get the same medication or treatments that are available to one group of people. You're not allowed to get that. Based on who you are, not your medical necessity, but just solely based on who you are as a person, because some people in this country don't like you. That is insane to me. I don't understand how any of these doctors are looking their patients and their patients' parents, because these are all minors. Actually, it's not. They have now said that they're not going to treat any transgender patient under 19. Because they just made up an age and said even 18-year-olds who are legal adults in every other capacity, even 18-year-olds still can't make this decision for themselves. They have to wait till they get to 19 reasons.
They changed it to 19?
Yeah, just for this. Huh. It's the most ridiculous. So again, it's like on its face is so meritless. So I was shocked. I was shocked that doctors who swear Hippocratic oaths to do no harm would so readily sign up to do harm to their patients because they were, again, I don't know, scared of being, because all we've been hearing so far, all the excuses being made are, well, these doctors are scared that they're going to be sued. First of all, doctors are sued all the damn time. Okay. Medicine is one of the areas where people mind their P's and Q's, right? I mean, I'm very well steeped in all kinds of, you know, medical, and I'm not a lawyer, but like I deal with risk management and documentation and what kinds of things that you need to do to make sure if you are ever sued, that it's clear that you did the right thing. You made the right call. Doctors are sued all the time. They are meticulous with documentation. They are meticulous with record keeping already. So I just don't buy that they were like, oh, well, we're so afraid of being sued. It's like, no, I think you were afraid of being bothered. I think you were so ready to just roll over and say, oh, whatever, I'm not going to deal with this and no one really cares. So it's easier, you know, like I can't come to any other conclusion. On the other side, too, I was just shocked that they would all sign up to be sued for breaking actual laws. Because I didn't hear anywhere when they were announcing where Corewell Health or U of M, or again, if anybody else joins their little pathetic surrender parade, I didn't hear any of them say, we are no longer going to be prescribing hormone blockers to any patient under the age of 19, including those cisgendered, you know, kids that we treat for precocious puberty, right? There's a condition called precocious puberty, where kids, regardless of their eventual orientation or identity, they start showing signs of puberty really early. We're talking like 5, 6, 7-year-olds, right? Mm. And so one of the ways that they treat that is with hormone blockers. So are you telling me that it's okay to give cis kids hormone blockers, but trans kids not? Okay, well, again, you've just now made a medical decision, not based on what's medically appropriate, because again, nothing has changed in the medicine. Nothing has changed in the DSM-5. Nothing has changed in evidence-based practice guidelines of how to appropriately treat transgender minors. None of that has changed. Only thing that has changed is bigots in the DOJ who are weaponizing their transphobia against the country, right? That's literally the only thing that has changed. But U of M and Corewell Health, they didn't say, we're no longer treating precocious puberty. They didn't say, you know what, we're no longer going to prescribe testosterone to cisgendered boys who have hypogonadism. They didn't say that. They didn't say, you know what, we can't prescribe birth control to cisgender youth anymore because it's got estrogen in it. And that's not fair because we're denying estrogen to trans girls. They didn't say that, right? They didn't say we're going to shut down a huge chunk of our pediatric endocrinology practices, right, that use these same exact medications They didn't say any of that. They just said, we're not going to provide gender affirming care to minors anymore. And by doing so, they have now just advertised to all of us that they intend to violate the civil rights of our kids. So they are going to be sued. They're going to be sued into bankruptcy because this is like ridiculously obvious. I mean, usually you have to like go through a lot to show discrimination. They have broadcast it to the world, their intention to discriminate against a protected class of patients. So again, I don't buy the excuse that you just decided that it was too much of a hassle and you were too afraid for your license. Well, guess what? Licenses are issued by the state. They are not issued by the federal government. And yeah, maybe they could threaten to withhold. They've done all sorts of threats, right? Well, we're not going to let you reimburse, you know, U of M will be cut off from CMS, right? You can't get reimbursed for Medicare and Medicaid services or, you know, reimbursement for those patients, right? Fine, fight that in court. And again, anytime they've done that and anyone has taken them to court, they have won, right? But no, they won't even fight. They won't even fight, Pat.
Right. And Julia, I think that's why there are many Michiganders and many Americans right now who are feeling despondent because they feel like the institutions that they were counting on to protect us aren't really protecting us at this time. So there is a U of M Board of Regents meeting that is scheduled for this week. I know that you were planning on going there, but you just learned of some news. So go ahead.
I did. So U of M Regents meetings are public, right? They are monthly. The next one is on Thursday, the 18th. Everyone is welcome to go, but if you want to speak and actually be heard, you have to sign up for a speaking slot for public comment, which I did, which my husband did, which my son did, which lots of my friends, a lot of people have signed up for this. So I'm glad that there's a lot of interest. Well, we all got a rejection letter today. We got an email that said, nope, you don't get to speak. And when we asked why, they said, well, there was a lot of people. Okay, great. Well, how many is a lot? They send us their guidelines that say they will allow up to 10 speaking slots with a maximum of 2 minutes of comments. So they have allotted 20 whole minutes a month to hear from the public, to hear from their constituents, I should say, because we vote on U of M Regents.
Precisely.
So they are only deigning to hear 20 minutes of public comments on their decisions per month. So when they do something horribly stupid or harmful, they only have to sit there for 20 minutes and pretend to care what we say. So no, we won't get to speak on Thursday. Apparently, we'll have to see which 10 people they selected to speak, but there will be plenty of people there. And I would highly encourage anyone within the sound of my voice, please show up. Even though they won't let us speak at the meeting, we can make sure they see that we're there, that we have a presence, and that we let them know, no, the public is not going to just roll over and let you hurt trans kids because you're too much of a coward to tell this administration to go pound sand when they send you blatantly meritless little mean notes.
Julia, is there a place people can go to learn more about this Board of Regents meeting that's taking place on Thursday, the 18th? And I believe the meeting is scheduled for 3:30 p.m. again on the 18th. Like you said, they're not going to be able to speak, but it always looks good to have strength in numbers. And I'm sure that there would be many people, if they can, would like to attend and will show their support for, well, our side and show the Regents how they are opposing what U of M decided to do here.
Mm-hmm. If people go on their Facebook, there are lots of events around this. People are organizing. The location is University Hall on Geddes Avenue in Ann Arbor. It's 1109 Geddes Avenue, University Hall in the, was it Ruthven Building? I'm not a U of M person, so I don't know the campus that well, but where they have the meetings is University Hall, 1109 Geddes Avenue in Ann Arbor.
All right. And one final question here, Julia, and thank you so much for your time. Because of this decision, what are parents and what are families to do now? I mean, what recourse is there for them?
Well, a lot of parents are scrambling to try to figure out how to continue their kids' care. There are some brave providers out there who are going to continue to provide care to their patients because unlike U of M and unlike CoreWell Health, they have physicians and nurse practitioners and other providers who do support their patients no matter what. Like that phrase, no matter what, is really coming into play here. There are organizations like Stand With Trans. You can look at Equality Michigan. Any LGBTQ plus organizations will have referrals for you. Most likely what's going to happen is we're going to be, not forced to go underground, but kind of forced to find smaller providers who are dedicated to providing this care for patients, who have more guts and gumption than institutions with millions and hundreds of millions of dollars at their disposal. So they are out there still. There are still providers out there. Like I said, it is still 100% legal in Michigan. Nothing about the law has changed. So visit Stand With Trans. I'm in Oakland County. There is Affirmations in Ferndale. There are organizations that are dedicated and are doing the work. Reach out to them, please. If your teen is struggling, there are hotlines out there. I know, you know, the ones that were publicly funded were cut because they really don't care if trans kids hurt themselves. But the Trevor Project is a great resource for trans families who need help and for trans youth especially. There are people out there who care. I don't want anyone to think that this is over, this is done, there's nothing. There's a lot of people out there who are ready to help and who will not abandon you when the going gets tough.
All right, Julia Pulver, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on Left of Lansing again to talk about this human rights issue and also parental rights issue. Yeah, that's right, parental rights. I seem to remember, a political party always talking about parental rights.
Right.
Except
remember that, like, we don't co-parent with the government?
Yeah.
Well, apparently the government is trying to co-parent with me, and they're a lousy co-parent because they don't think my son is a human being who has any worth and dignity. And apparently U of M and CoreWell Health agree with them. So that's kind of ridiculous. But yeah, no one cares about parents' rights when it's something that they disagree with, right? Which just goes to show you every single argument they've ever tried to make has been in bad faith, and they don't actually believe anything. It is all just propaganda to excuse whatever behavior they already wanted to do anyway. And then they just like make it about something. Like, they don't actually care. They don't believe in anything. They don't stand for anything. All they want to do is just get their way, and they'll make up whatever BS they think people will swallow to excuse it.
And they can scapegoat those they view to be the most vulnerable.
Right. Well, and I will tell you too, you know, in the wake of everything from last week and the completely baseless and irresponsible immediate blaming of trans people for violence, of course, completely ignoring the fact that trans people are way more likely to have the violence visited upon them than have them visited upon someone else. It's taking a toll. It really is. Even the strongest kids with the strongest support are feeling it because, you know, kids at school hear hateful stuff from their parents who hear it from, you know, the commander in chief, and they hear it from people who are, you know, supposedly involved in things and telling them, well, this is the reason why bad things happen, because trans people exist, you know? So they hear that, and then they go and they make our kids' lives hell because they're being told trans people are bad and dangerous and responsible for all of the violence and ills of the country, if not the world. That takes a toll. I don't care how strong you are. I don't care how big of a support group you have. If you're constantly being told by adults in your world that you are a terrible person and you are just on the verge of doing bad and evil things all the time, and that there's something wrong with you, I mean, that seeps in. Trans kids are not okay right now. They are being bullied at the highest levels of our government constantly. And not enough people are pushing back and saying, knock it off. These are children. You can have whatever personal opinions you want, just like you can have whatever personal opinions you want about any subject, but that doesn't mean that you should try to make other people's lives hell if they don't agree with you. You know, I find it so ironic that everyone is so concerned about, you know, whether or not hate speech is okay and whether or not, you know, you should say nice things about bad people after they die or whatnot. Okay, where is this like causing concern about the words we use and the reaction we have when it has to do with like anybody but you? Mm-hmm. You know, no one can, like, no one's buying that because your actions and your words are so different. I don't expect anything from the people who've made it clear that they hate us and hate my kid and hate my husband and I for, you know, supporting our kid. But where is everyone else? All right. Where is everybody else saying, knock it off and leave these kids alone? We've had so many people give us good support and everything, but the silence from a lot of people, and even a lot of people in our own party, higher up in our own party, leading our state in some ways, haven't heard a freaking thing from them, other than maybe some vagaries about, sure, I support the LGBTQ plus community, right? I'm not hearing any of that aimed directly at the transphobia that is like traumatizing our youth right now. I haven't heard any of that saying, knock it off. These are kids. Leave them alone.
Well, listen, that's a great place to leave it there, Julia. Thanks for everything that you're doing. We will keep everyone here updated on the latest on this story. And as always, you know, the door is always open for you here. Thanks again.
I do, Pat. Thank you so much. You are so important, and I'm glad your voice is out there.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
You know, I've said this before, but one reason I started this show was to give a platform to those progressive fighters out there like Julia Pulver, who, as you could hear, brings the passion and the fight against MAGA Michigan Republican authoritarians. And I'm glad that she mentioned how some Democrats in Michigan haven't been leading the charge against this authoritarianism or fascism. And I'm afraid that they're going to be held account when it comes to primary time. Next week, I'll talk with another strong progressive fighter from Lansing, Kelsey Hector. Shocked the political world when Kelsey finished in the top two in the Lansing mayoral primary race. Now, Kelsey is taking on the establishment Democratic mayor, Andy Shore, who's got the backing of Whitmer and the powerful Lansing Chamber Political Action Committees this November. But she's ready for the fight, and we'll hear more of Kelsey's story next week. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. In yet another example of MAGA Michigan Republican authoritarianism, the creepy State Representative Josh Shriver of Oxford, that's in northern Oakland County, introduced a bill banning all online porn in the state. But the bill would especially seek to ban porn depicting a disconnection, as it says, between gender and biology. So transgender or drag artists are under attack from another MAGA Michigan Republican bill. Danny, this isn't Russia. Wait, this isn't Russia, is it? No, I didn't think so. All right, I'm sorry for the Caddyshack reference there, but hey, I'm on a roll when it comes to 40-year-old movies, and those kids out there say I'm not hip. Anyway, Shriver claims that 90% of youth under the age of 18 have seen porn, and it's killing our drive and the nation's morality. Now, looking to ban free speech, artistic expression, and seek to force sexual repression on law-abiding Americans notwithstanding, if you really want to kill the nation's drive or the drive here in Michigan, just look at pictures of Josh Shriver. I mean, what a weirdo. And by the way, the National Institute of Health says the number of Americans under 18 who have viewed pornography is 42%. And another study on the Institute of Health's website says 66% of males answer that they view porn, while 40% of females say they view it as well. So it's obviously popular amongst the people, and it's creating jobs. Entrepreneurship at its best. That's the American way. That's the free market. Now, just looking at Josh Shriver, one probably doesn't even want to dare look through his browser history. And by the way, Shriver also voted against banning child marriage, and he introduced a bill to ban gay marriage in Michigan as well. For all of their talk, they aren't about freedom of speech, and they're not about freedom in any way. They're about forcing their weird white Christian nationalist beliefs on all of us. And again, I seem to recall MAGA Michigan Republicans saying that once they get into office, they would lower costs. How? How is banning porn lowering costs? How in the world is that helping the working class? Now, Shriver's bill would carry hefty fines and jail time for those found guilty of distributing online porn, which I guess means his dear leader would be in some trouble since he's obviously a big fan of porn stars. Shriver is a perfect representation of Michigan MAGA Republicans. They have no solutions for the working class, but they certainly love to see what you're doing in your bedroom or wherever you are in your house. I don't judge. That's not the nanny state. That's not even the daddy state. That's the creepy authoritarian state.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Thanks again to Julia Pulver for being on, and I'll provide a link for the Stands with Trans movement wherever you're listening to the show. Next week, Lansing mayoral candidate Kelsey Hector will join me. Yes, as we tried to warn everyone last year, we are living in some dangerous times with the authoritarianism from the Trump regime and its cult MAGA Republican Party. And guess what? It's only going to get worse. Capitulation is never the answer. Fighting for democracy, free speech, science, and the working class is needed more than anything. We're at a tipping point in American history here, everyone, and I guess that's why Robert Redford's death this week really hit me. I mean, Redford was always a political activist and environmentalist, and he was always someone through his Sundance Film Festival who helped marginalized voices get their art out to the world. He believed that films could and should practice in political activism to help make the world a better place. And with that, I will give you Pat Johnston's top five favorite Robert Redford films. Okay, here we go. Number five, The Candidate. Please watch that one. It is dark. It is good. Number four, of course, The Sting with he and Paul Newman. Number three, yes, I'm a huge baseball fan, and I like Barry Levinson movies, so The Natural has to be up there. Number two, well, yes, All the President's Men. And number one, of course, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And why does All the President's Men now seem so, what's the word I'm looking for, anachronistic today in today's time as the corporate media keeps capitulating to the Trump regime? We're at a tipping point, everyone. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.